think of heroes, the first thing that comes to mind is my parents when I was really, really little. The way that I would look up to them, and I always thought that my mom, you know, had the answer to everything. And when you get older, you kind of realize that your parents, you know, don't have all of the answers, and in fact are often just as confused as you are. And then usually there's something that replaces that sort of need to have an omniscient, omnipotent thing. And, you know, for some people, the thing that replaces it is something like a spiritual guide or God. And for other people, I think that's when heroes come in. Or independent writer and producer Nihar Patel, his heroes as a child were the gangster rap group NWA. For an Indian American kid growing up in a mostly all-white suburb in Northern California, NWA was a stark, stark contrast to anything that he knew around him. And when he talked to me, he basically compared the music of NWA to cowboys in the Wild Wild West or something like that. It's interesting to see what happens when we see them get brought down to our level. And that is the very subject of this installment of Club Awesome. Any song that's meant anything to anybody ever.
The street I grew up on was called Fernhill Lane. I mean, can you get any, you know, more suburban than that? But we would never call it the Fernhill Lane. We would refer to ourselves as the FHC, the Fernhill Crew, because there's the LBC, the Long Beach Crew, Long Beach County, which was Snoop and Dre's thing, and that would be another way that we would kind of pretend that we were living this ghetto fantasy out in the middle of the boonies in Northern California.
Nihar said he never came to this aha moment where he figured out that he wasn't the same race as most of the kids around him.
I think I always knew that I wasn't white because the languages spoken in my house were not always English. But I will say that I did, at some point in sixth grade, everybody was really into being Irish. And I think at some point I started telling people I was 10% Irish, which is actually not genetically possible. But it was the kind of thing where everybody had Notre Dame Fighting Irish parkas, and you were like, well, I gotta, you know, I gotta kind of throw down a bit. I mean, because I feel like I'm a little detached from the rest of my peers. So I told myself 10% Irish, not a bad thing to be, right? Indian was not something that had any cultural cachet to it. I mean, the Chinese guys had Bruce Lee. What did we have? We had Gandhi? I mean, Gandhi is not hard. I mean, you can't just go up and say, like, you know, you can't have a poster of Gandhi over your bed. You can have a poster of Bruce Lee. You can have a poster of Malcolm X, Dre, any of the guys from NWA, whatever. You just can't have, you know, Gandhi. I mean, there was nobody there who got me any cred. So, you know, what was telling me, you know, be Indian, be black and proud, be brown and proud? Nothing.
So one day, Nihar came up to me, and he said that he had found out the name of the guy who used to run a club where NWA used to perform a lot in, you know, when they were first starting out. The club's name was Eve After Dark, and it was located kind of on the border of Compton in California. And he suggested for an episode of Club Awesome that we go over there and check it out. So we hopped in the car, and we went. The song that really got Nihar was this track called 100 Miles and Running. Basically, it's about the rappers in the group breaking out of prison. And for some reason, that was the song that really hit him.
I think before that, there were songs like Will Smith's Parents Just Don't Understand, which is that kind of very safe song that I think everybody likes. And it's still a good song. I mean, I'm not hating on Will Smith or anything. You know, NWA is not Will Smith.
100 miles and running, MC Ren, I hold the gun in. You want me to kill a motherfucker and it's done it. System stereotype to kill and destruct. It's one of the main reasons I don't give a fuck. Chances,
you know, NWA is not Will Smith. There's no poignant, comical look at the way parents want you to grow up. These kids, I don't even think they ever had a childhood.
What we said in the past, point blank, nigga, kiss my black ass. I didn't stutter when I said, fuck the police, because it's hard for a nigga to get peace.
What was Eazy-E like as a kid? You know, you don't even think about that. You think, these guys are grown-ass men, and they are hard, and they don't take shit from nobody, and that's what you want to be.
Well, that was the image, but I'm wondering how much of that is true. If they actually did. Or if they grew up in an environment that was like yours. Did you ever think about that?
No.
Do you think that you retained any of that? Any of that, you know, like don't... that sort of damn the man mentality?
You know, it's really hard for me to tell because, I mean, I have a fairly good little existence now. And I certainly am not what you would consider a complete rebel against society. Maybe I think I am, but I don't think anybody would ever call me that. But, I do little funny things, like when, this is maybe an unintended consequence, and everybody feels this, I'm sure. I got a parking ticket just this morning, and, the first thing I'm thinking is just like, if that parking meter maid was right here, I would jack that motherfucker, you know? Parking tickets, okay, maybe it's not getting sent to Chino for 20 to life, but I broke a law today, all right? And I got caught.
Eve After Dark was really difficult to find. We must have driven to Long Beach and the Valley and back a couple times, just because the address was really obscure. So it was a surprise when we actually found it.
We're at El Segundo Boulevard. It's what? Right there? It's right there. All right. We're gonna turn this jalopy around.
We get out of the car, and
it's right on the border.
Nihar is obviously really excited, but his excitement looks kind of funny when it's compared to the street that we're on, which is basically empty, apart from a couple of street vendors and people getting their haircut.
Tell me what you're looking at right now.
Well, there's a two-story brick stretch. I don't want to say strip mall because there's no parking lot. It's really right off of the street. And on the top story, there's a little Mexican restaurant, Mi Estrellita. There's a, looks like a rental, real estate rental place. Barbershop, Flying Flashy Hair Company. And then there's just right in the middle of all this, there's a canopy and a little two-story office, and it looks like somebody could even live here. And there's no sign outside, and it says 12817½ on the door. And if you pointed to this and if you asked a dozen people walking by if they knew what happened here, I doubt more than 1 out of 10 would know that.
So Nihar decides to test his theory and corners a guy that's walking out of the barbershop next to the club. He points to what we know as the Eve After Dark and asks the man if he knows what went on behind that door.
Yeah. I think it's still open after dark.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Yeah? Is it called Eve After Dark?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I've been there for years. It's been there for years. They don't open until after dark. Eve After Dark.
That would make a lot of sense. My friend and I are making a little a tape on, because he really liked a group that played there a lot.
NWA.
Oh. Oh, Nick with Attitude? Yeah.
Do you remember when they used to play here at all?
Yeah, a little while back, you know. But it'd be open. I come by here occasionally, you know. After dark, that's what it says. Eve after dark.
What are there still young kids coming here, or is it mainly people who? Is it more of a kind of chill club?
It's more or less a chill club.
But it used to bump, right?
Yeah, it used to bump. You know, but the youngsters got out of hand. You know, so they cater to the little older generation now.
So what was the last thing you remember seeing here?
It's been a while since the group been there. You know, I mean, I come in and watch the girls dance. They have a show, so I come and have a beer, watch the girls dance. Well, it got history, you know. It's, like I said, it's been there a while, you know.
Well, what's your name?
My name is Dave.
Dave.
Dave Hooker.
Dave Hooker.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you very much, Dave.
Okay.
All right. Wow, this place is still open. I can't believe it. I actually thought it was closed, but certainly doesn't have that, you know, you look at the way that CBGB's went from being like a really profitable brand almost, you know, every wannabe hipster for a while, or even, I say wannabe hipster because cool hipsters know better than to wear a t-shirt that says CBGB's, but you know, they must have sold a million of those t-shirts, CBGB's, but there's no t-shirt that says Eve After Dark, you know, which is a little disappointing because again, this is like, you know, if I were to tell my friends, and if I call up my brother, the guy who gave me the NWA tape, that, yeah, you know, I went to the club where it happened, I think there'd be a lot of interest. Whatever happened to that place? And I guess now you got dancing ladies, and it's a mainly older clientele, and maybe it's not ground zero for any great movement anymore, and it's just any old street number and any old part of the giant sprawl of Southern California.
So we leave the Eve After Dark to see the guy who used to run the club. His name's Alonzo Williams, and today he's hosting a talent competition at the Hollywood Park Casino, so that's our next stop. On the way, Nihar points out something that compares him to his childhood heroes.
You know, the word thug comes from India. Do you know that? Thugs were a kind of cult of murderers in 19th century India, South India, where they were like a cult of stranglers. And that's they were called the thugs, and that's where the word thug, it's actually from Hindi or if there was another language in that part of India. And it happened to make itself its way into the English language.
When did
so I am an original thug!
The talent show at the Hollywood Park Casino is located on the fifth floor, set far back from all of the roulette and poker tables. We walk into a dimly lit banquet room that smells of old coats and alcohol. We ask where Alonzo Williams is, and he's in the sound booth. He's the guy that gives the performers the music they need to go on stage. Nihar spends no time waiting around to ask Alonzo about his role in NWA's early success.
My studio, my house, where I live right today still, was like the Mecca where Dre, Easy, Yella, Ren, everybody hung out at my house. And my studio was where they cut all the demos and stuff like that. And Easy I kind of consulted Easy in the very beginning on how to put his company together. The name NWA was formed in my living room. The name Ruthless Records was discussed and debated on in my living room. The demos were cut in my studio, so I had a pretty good hand, you know, in the beginning of that whole situation there.
So what was it when you were, and you and NWA were kind of...
Well, back in the day, it was more lyrical content. You know, Wrecking Crew was always about making you dance. It was the beats and the hooks that made people get on the floor and dance. The opening, the first 14 seconds, 15 seconds of a song was like, was the grabber. And after that, everything else kind of brought you in and kept you in. NWA's situation was pretty much the their thing was a lot of the shock value, so that brought them. Plus, Dre still had the same Wrecking Crew intros, those intros of NWA records that just immediately got your attention. So,
like 100 miles and running, it's like the footsteps of somebody running. It's right. That like initial yeah.
It always, you know, it always like a beginning of a soap opera. Okay, it was always something that got your attention initially and kept your attention. So by the time you got to the story, the music already had you drawn in. It was just a matter of reeling you in from that point on.
Listening to NWA, that album, that EP specifically, 100 Miles and Running, that was like the first thing. I listened to that, and that was like, music doesn't have to be corny. Music doesn't have to be about crushes a guy has on a girl. It can be about serious shit with people talking in the language that they speak normally. But... did you ever have some sense that, like, you were affecting at that point, or any of the guys you were working with, or anybody who was in the scene at that point, that the ripples were being felt in, you know, white-ass suburbs nowhere near, you know, Compton?
When NWA first started off, man, it was never really intended to do what it did. It was kind of a political accident. You know, it was like, these guys had been working with me for the last past 4 or 5 years. We just got dropped from CBS, and we were kind of struggling financially as a group, as individuals, and they wanted to do something that was going to be kind of opposite of what Luke and Two Live Crew was doing, because they were getting a lot of play from the shock value of, hey, I want some, you know, whatever the case may be. And Luke had just won a big case against the state of Florida, wherever he was, when he got snatched off the stage for obscenity, won that first amendment right to free speech. So NWA took it to another level on the other side. They're talking about sex, let's talk about politics. And for me, it was like, okay, cool, but I know the individuals, they're not political-minded cats. So I'm like, okay, so I know that it was more of a something they stumbled upon. It was not something that they planned to do, to go out here like a Chuck D or a KRS-One. They weren't trying to change the world. They were just trying to make some money.
So can you tell us maybe a little more about, like, those early days? Like, who did you, how did you kind of bring people together? Who did you know first, and how did you kind of get the ball?
Actually, I knew, oddly enough, I knew Dre first, because Dre and I grew up on the same block. His uncles and I used to hang out together, throw rocks at each other, and fight the whole nine yards, but we were always cool. And Dre's dad and my oldest sister were friends. And when he was born, he came to my house. Hey, I had a son named Andre. And I firmly remember that's been the first time I ever heard the name Andre. And time passes on, and I open up the club, and a guy brings it to my attention, and a buddy of mine. Shortly after that, his uncle came to my club and told me who he was. So that's kind of how he got a pass to come to the Eve After Dark. And then but before then, I'd met Yella and Unknown and Easy, and Dre came together.
So, what do you remember about those guys, like who they were at that age? Because they were pretty young.
They were nerve-wracking. I'm like 8 years older than Dre. Okay, so I was always the big brother, big daddy, big uncle. Every problem they had came to me. Got somebody pregnant, come to Lonzo. You know, need some money for child support, come to Lonzo. Car breakdown, come to Lonzo. So you got 4 or 5 guys doing the same thing all the time. It's kind of nerve-wracking. Then they want to play. Then I got to chase the girls off. Girls hanging out at my house. And then he got 2 or 3 girls. Dre always had 3 or 4 girls around the house. They'd be stalking him around the corner. It was a madhouse. And, you know, it was fun. I look back now, it was kind of fun. But back then, it got kind of crazy, because I'm trying to sell records, talk to the DA, consult, pay people, make records, sell records, distribute records, deal with Makota, dealing with these 3 or 4 guys and their girlfriends. You know, it was like being a father. It was like being somebody's dad.
All right, that's about it for me. Do you have any?
Yeah, 2 things. The first one is, you talked a little bit about Two Live Crew in the beginning. So tell me, just in your words, like, what was their music about?
Two Live Crew, whole show was about sex and pussy. That was it. All they talked about was sex. The first record of Makola was MFSB, motherfucking son of a bitch. And Don McMillan was biting his nails the entire time when he saw the label. He's like, oh my God, I'm going to get sued. I'm going to have this problem, blah, blah, blah. But they kept on trying to mask it. They had a clean version, I do believe, and they got away with it.
So you said that NWA went as people, they weren't necessarily political.
I never saw one of them in the newspaper. Everything they did came from either experience or somebody telling them about it. They never, no.
But experience, in your opinion, wouldn't make somebody political?
It would make you political to a certain degree, but also, for me, they never really sold me on the idea, because I knew them. You know, for me, it was almost like watching CB4, okay? I was Gusto, and they were doing the Gusto stuff, okay? I'm the one that had the nightclub, going to jail, you know, carrying guns and fighting and carrying on, and they're watching me. most of the time, literally watching me fight, okay, or watching me deal things. I'm all of a sudden, I look up, and these cats are the ones, you know, I never claim to be a gangster. Let me make this perfectly clear. I never claimed to be a gangster. But on a nightclub in South Central L.A., you had to be a character, okay? You had to be a pretty tough character because you was always getting challenged. Well, me and my partners, me and Unknown, the guys who actually started the club, we had many a fight, kicked much ass, got our asses kicked many a day. You know, I'm the one that went to jail for possession of deadly weapons multiple times and the whole nine yards, you know, arrested for attempted murder. Not saying these are things to be proud of, okay? But when you look back on the overall story, and these guys who never been in jail, Yella never been in jail, Dre never been in jail. I don't know about Easy and Ren, but I know these two guys didn't go to jail. Dre went to jail, it was always for warrants until he got some money. So I'm the one that had the police record kicking all the ass and taking all the names and had the guys kicking ass for me after a certain point in time. And then these guys turned around and become stars from doing stuff that me and my fellas did. Maybe a few, some of them they personally experienced, a lot of stuff they heard, okay? You know, selling dope, yes. I know Easy sold dope, okay? Dre never sold no dope to my knowledge, okay? Dre had issues with baby mamas. He had issues with the police. I mean, I remember one time they were riding down the Harbor Freeway with a paintball shotgun shooting at people's cars, okay?
With a paintball gun.
With a paintball shotgun. Easy had a paintball shotgun, and they thought it was funny to shoot at people's cars with a paintball shotgun. And they shot at some cars, and, you know, and a high patrol just swooped down on them, okay? And they was wondering what they did wrong. They came to my house almost in tears because the high patrol wanted to kick their ass. You could have got people killed doing that, man. And it's like, how far out of touch are you with reality? That wasn't funny, okay? So, yes, they had, because of that, they had some run-ins with the police because that was stupid. But other than getting tickets and stuff like that, I mean, you know, it is what it is. It wasn't, I can't recall anything so life-altering that they make them want to become militants. And, you know, and Dre told me once upon a time he never had a fight before in his life. And for me to have been fighting, and I was up as old as 28 years old at the club, him watching me fight and telling me he can't fight because I gotta play records. No, you gotta get one of these fools off my ass, okay? And turn back around a few years later, become this big gangster killer. I'm like, come on, dude. So it was just one of those things meant to be.
I think we're good.
As we walk out of the banquet hall where the talent show was being hosted, Nihar's really quiet. I wait till we get outside to talk to him about what his thoughts were about what Alonzo had just said.
He's got an axe to grind, though. Just to be a little skeptical.
What's your reaction hearing what, you know, this is just one perspective, but what's your reaction, you know, from this guy who's, you know, had contact with, you know, NWA when they were first starting up? Has it changed your perception now of the members?
They were like me, you know, like you were the geeky, they're a little geekier than you think.
So now you think that Dre would have gotten the same reaction if he would have woken up this morning and found that his car had a parking ticket?
Apparently Dre would have been pissed, and Dre may have taken out his paintball gun. You know, the funny thing is, we used to go around shooting things with paintball guns, too.
So really,
paintball guns.
So really, you had a lot more in common with NWA than you thought.
I actually am ready to say I could have been the sixth member of NWA. I think if Dre never got in a fight before the age of 28, I got in, like, three fights before I was even, like, out of high school. I never had people to back me up, and I was getting my ass kicked. So, yeah, and I have to say, you were right. You know, maybe I was kind of blinded by what I thought, you know, they were living. I mean, I'm sure what they were doing was way harder than me anyway. I mean, a big, huge concert club owner like that, you know, he seems like the guy who had more of the experiences, but I still think, you know, I've certainly never sold drugs. I never had four ladies just hanging around my house or somebody else's house who weren't my aunts. Was there anything that surprised you?
No.
You bitch.
Why do you have to kill my dreams?
That's why
my entire illusion is shattered!
You're never gonna let me live this one down, are you?
Nope.
Are never gonna let me live this one down. I would just like to say, everything we said on the way to the casino about Taylor, you don't know, okay, these guys are tough, they're hard, you know, they lived the stories that they told. Now that we've realized 90% of that is bullshit, I just want you to be the bigger person and say, I know I was right, but I don't need to say anything.
I won't say anything. I'll just make a show about it.
And that wraps it up for this installment of Club Awesome. You can always get a hold of us by going to our MySpace page. That's www.myspace.com/thisisclubawesome. Again, a special thanks to independent writer and producer Nihar Patel.
You don't know me? Your whole fucking family is wearing my t-shirts. Alright, wanna kill it for a little while? I got nothing more to say.
No, I just have it on.
I don't think
it's okay.
I hope you don't have to listen through all this crap.
I probably will.